This is Audible.
Murder at the Dolphin Hotel. Written by Helena Dixon. Narrated by Alex Tregear. Torbay Herald. The 10th of June, 1916. Dartmouth, England. A reward is offered for information regarding the disappearance of local Dartmouth mother of one, Mrs. Eloed Underhay. Mrs. Underhay, aged 27, was last seen 2 weeks previously, when she was thought to have departed from Kingsware Station to visit friends near London. She has not been heard from since, and her family and friends are keen to assure themselves of her safety. She was not thought to be in low spirits or to have any financial difficulties at the time of her disappearance. Mrs. Underhay is described as 5'2", blonde, with blue eyes, and was dressed in a rose-pink travelling costume with grey hat and gloves. Any information to be given to Mrs. Treadwell, the Dolphin Hotel, the Embankment, Dartmouth. Chapter 1. Dartmouth, 1933. Kitty Underhay was on reception duty at her grandmother's hotel. Outside the revolving doors lay a fresh, sunlit afternoon. Inside the lobby there was the scent of beeswax and lavender, with dust motes floating in the air. "They fetched a body out the river this morning," Cora murmured to Kitty as she whisked her duster across the top of the reception desk. The older woman glanced around the lobby to check there were no guests within earshot before continuing with her tale. "Foreigner. Dutch, they said, and it looks a bad business. Constable told me he'd had his head bashed in." "Cora, really?" Kitty glared at her employee. "You are the limit." Cora loved a titbit of gossip, and in a small, sleepy riverside town like Dartmouth, foul play on this scale was unusual, to say the least. She bustled around the desk, her round, middle-aged face avid with glee at being the bearer of news. "Police is searching the banks down by the lower ferry. Mr. Fargin found him in the water when he went to open up his booth. Says he thought it were a dead dog, so he fetched a long stick, and there was a face looking back up at him, all glassy-eyed and weed-covered." The maid's stout frame shuddered at the thought. Kitty sighed. Once Cora got started, it was difficult to stop her, but she had to admit that her curiosity was piqued, even if she could have done without the details. As in any town that had a high number of holidaymakers and boats calling into port, one expected some issues, especially with the Naval College on the hill at the edge of town. Even so, a murder, especially of a stranger, was indeed news.
"You can't trust foreigners."
Cora pursed her lips and rubbed at an imaginary spot in front of the visitor's ledger. "I heard as well that..." Whatever else she was about to add was left unsaid, as Kitty's grandmother, small and elegant in a tweed suit, silk blouse and pearls, swept up to the reception area.
"I think the desk is clean enough now, Cora, thank you. And Kitty, dear, please pay attention to your work. You need to pay more notice when you're on duty at the front desk. People expect high standards at the Dolphin."
Cora tucked her duster into the pocket of her starched white apron and hurried away, clearly piqued at not being able to finish her tale. Kitty couldn't decide whether to laugh or sigh as she tore her gaze away from the bustling river scene on the embankment outside the hotel. She wondered how many of the day visitors had been at the far end of the embankment, watching the police activity by the lower ferry.
"Sorry, Grams."
Her grandmother raised a perfectly groomed eyebrow.
"I wish you wouldn't keep drifting off into a trance. I'm worried that you won't be up to managing the Dolphin on your own whilst I'm away in Scotland. This tittle-tattle of Cora's doesn't help. One should feel safe in one's home."
The older woman ran her hand lovingly across the dark green leather visitor's ledger on the polished oak reception desk.
Grams, I've worked with you at the hotel since I was old enough to hold a duster. There is absolutely nothing for you to worry about. I'm sure the police will catch the culprit very quickly.
Kitty did her best not to let her frustration show in her voice. She'd lived at the hotel since she was a small child. She had worked in virtually every role that her grandmother had felt suitable, from housekeeping to the kitchen, yet she still treated her like a child, and an incapable one at that. The Dolphin might be the premier hotel in the small Devon River resort, but she was quite confident about her ability to run things in her grandmother's absence. As for the news of a murder right on their doorstep, well, it was unsettling, but nothing to do with the Dolphin.
I know, darling, but running a hotel is a lot of work and responsibility for one person. You never know what kind of problem may arise, especially at the start of the summer season. Anything could go wrong, from the chef walking out to a linen crisis. We're very busy with bookings, too. I do wish Livy hadn't had her accident at such an inconvenient time. It's so difficult to get help when she insists on living in such an uncivilized place.
The older woman frowned and adjusted the neat set of pearls encircling her throat.
Great Aunt Livy needs you to go to her. I'll be fine. The Dolphin will be fine. You'll be back from Scotland before you know it.
She pinned her brightest and most professional smile to her face. It wasn't Livy's fault that she'd slipped and fallen on the stairs and broken both her ankle and her shoulder.
I would have asked you to go to Livy, but since you've organized this newfangled jazz thing with that American woman, you really need to be here to keep an eye on it all.
We're very lucky to have secured Miss Delaware to open the summer season. She was quite a hit at the Cat's Meow Club in London. That kind of music is all the rage now. That's partly why we're so busy.
I just hope she doesn't attract the wrong kind of clientele. News of a murder in the vicinity will not be helpful for business. This masked ball you're planning at the end of her engagement will also be quite a lot of work.
Her grandmother still didn't sound convinced, especially about the American touring band and jazz singer that Kitty had booked for the first 2 weeks of the summer tourist season. It had been Kitty's idea to enhance their summer entertainment program with some new acts, rather than using the same local performers who toured all the hotels in the bay in turn. She gritted her teeth, determined to prove all of her grandmother's misgivings unfounded. Fortunately, one of Grams's friends entered the hotel through the dark oak and glass plate revolving door, and she was left in peace to get on with her work. However, when two more of her grandmother's oldest friends also entered the hotel a few minutes later and they headed for her private rooms, Kitty suspected something was afoot. Her fears were confirmed with the arrival of Mrs. Craven, a small, sturdy woman with iron-grey curls, an avant-garde little felt hat, and a fox fur stole about her shoulders. There was a determined expression on her face.
Kitty, my dear, how is your poor grandmother?
Her clarion voice carried across the lobby.
She's very well, thank you.
Of all her grandmother's friends, Mrs. Craven was the one she liked least. A former mayoress of the town, she was on the board of all the civic societies, every charitable committee, and was the ladies' golf captain. Somehow, she always contrived to make Kitty feel like something she'd scraped from the bottom of her shoe.
I don't know. Trust Livy to get into a scrape. She always was accident-prone, even as a girl. Thoughtless and reckless, Mrs. Craven pronounced.
She tugged off her gloves and dropped them into her handbag.
I presume your grandmother is in her salon.
Yes, I think she's just rung for tea.
Kitty struggled to get her head around her great-aunt as an accident-prone girl. Livy had turned 74 on her last birthday.
I do hope you're supporting your poor grandmother with all this worry. This accident is typical of Livy. Never a thought for other people, just like your mother.
Mrs. Craven swept away before Kitty could reply, which was lucky under the circumstances, as several very rude words hovered on the tip of her tongue.
"Here you go, Miss Kitty. You look like you need a cup of tea."
Cora reappeared and slid a tea tray onto the small bureau in the alcove behind the desk.
"There's a biscuit too, if you want one."
"Thank you, Cora." Kitty smiled at her, willing to overlook her earlier gossiping. Cora had worked at the hotel since Kitty was a child. A plump woman who filled out her neat black uniform and white apron, her greying hair was fixed in a neat bun under her white cap, and she was incorrigibly nosy. Kitty's grandmother overlooked her impudence because she was a good worker, and she knew Cora's home circumstances were not happy.
"I saw that old trout, Ma Craven, come in. I wonder how much we'll see of her once your Grams goes off to Scotland," Cora mused as she fiddled about with the tea things.
"I'd rather not think about it. Grams has a full meeting of the girls today, so I expect they'll be popping in and out to keep an eye on things, and on me too, no doubt. Especially after today." Kitty grimaced. She knew her grandmother and her friends all too well.
"Excuse me,"
a polite male voice interrupted their conversation.
"I was told to come here and ask for Mrs. Treadwell."
Cora melted away back into the lobby with the appearance of the man at the front desk. He was clean-shaven, tall and rangy, in his mid to late 30s. His suit appeared worn at the elbows and he carried a small battered leather bag. He didn't fit the profile for the Dolphin's usual clientele, or the description of anyone her grandmother would be likely to have an appointment with. Kitty hesitated, unsure if she should interrupt her grandmother's morning gathering with her friends.
Miss? This is the Dolphin Hotel."
His blue eyes seemed to sparkle with amusement at her confusion. "Yes, sir, of course. You said my grandmother was expecting you." The stranger's grin widened, revealing a small dimple in his right cheek.
"Yes, Mrs. Treadwell is expecting me."
Kitty's professional training kicked in.
"I'll just call through."
She picked up the telephone receiver and dialed the extension number for her grandmother's suite with a shaky finger.
"What name shall I give her?"
"Matthew, Mr. Matthew Bryant."
Her grandmother answered on the second ring.
"Grams, there's a Mr. Matthew Bryant in reception. He says he has an appointment with you."
She noticed the stranger's lips twitch when she emphasized the Mr. in front of his name.
"Wonderful, I've been expecting him. Ask Cora to show him through to my rooms."
Kitty carefully set the receiver back in its cradle, a million unanswered questions buzzing in her head. Her grandmother was clearly up to something, and her sixth sense told her it was something that Kitty wouldn't like. There had been a lot of odd things happening lately. None of them very significant, but perplexing nonetheless, and her grandmother had not been keen to discuss them.
"I'll just call someone to take you through."
She was about to press the small brass call bell for the portering staff when Cora reappeared. Kitty wondered how much she had heard. She couldn't have been far away from the desk, no doubt doing her best to eavesdrop. Nothing pleased Cora more than being the first to know something.
"Cora, could you show Mr. Bryant to Grams's rooms, please?"
The man hefted the leather bag.
"Nice to meet you."
He leaned in to read the discreet gold badge pinned to her lapel.
"Miss Kitty Underhay."
Heat sizzled in her cheeks at the amusement in his eyes, at her obvious discomfort at his impudence.
"If you'd like to follow me, sir."
Cora headed off across the lobby towards the stairs, with the stranger following in her wake. Thankfully, the lobby was empty now of guests, so Kitty took advantage of the opportunity to take a sip of the tea Cora had left for her in the alcove. Although the drink was almost cold, it helped to fortify her nerves. She wondered who Matthew Bryant was, what his business with her grandmother could be. She swallowed her last mouthful, shuddering slightly at the cold dregs. A faint tremor in her fingers, which had started when he'd arrived, now caused the china to chatter when she replaced her cup onto the saucer. She wasn't certain why the stranger's arrival had affected her, but something about him had unsettled her usual calm. She peeped out of her hiding place at the glimpse of spring sunshine outside the lobby. On days like today, the centuries-old building seemed to close in on her, suffocating her and pinning her to the ancient walls like a helpless moth. The hotel was almost as old as Dartmouth itself, dating back to the 1500s and handed down in Kitty's family from generation to generation since it had first begun as a small tavern to the present day, when it was a large hotel, catering for the growing tourist trade. The half-timbered building faced the river not far from the upper ferry station, and a brisk walk from Wharfleet Bay and the ancient Dartmouth Castle. Outside, the sun shone on the water. The castle stood guard at the river mouth, and people were enjoying the fine day. She was inside, trapped by her inheritance, doing the same mundane jobs day after day. "I'd better get rid of that tea tray, miss, before your grandmother spots it, or we'll both be in trouble." Cora whisked into the alcove and collected the tray of dirty crockery. "Thank you, Cora. Did you take that man to see Grams?" Impudent as ever, Cora replied, "Yes, miss, and I tried to find out why he was here, as I was sure I'd seen him before, but he was as close-mouthed as an oyster." She shook her head, a perplexed expression on her face. "Sorry, miss, got no information for you." Matt shifted uncomfortably on the rose-patterned chintz armchair, the continued scrutiny of a half-dozen pairs of eyes boring into his skin. "More tea, Captain Bryant?" Mrs. Treadwell picked up the silver teapot and gestured towards his half-empty cup. "No, thank you. And please, I prefer to be plain Mister. The war is long over, and my army service is ended." He set the cup down carefully on its saucer, on a small, highly polished mahogany side table. Mrs. Treadwell placed the teapot back on the tray and folded her hands onto her lap. "Very well. Now, I realise my proposition is a little unusual, but as I leave for Scotland tomorrow, time is of the essence, and Kitty's well-being is my prime concern. Even more so now there has been a murder only this morning so close to the hotel." Matt raked his hand through his hair and wished he'd thought to don a better suit and tie. Better clothes would at least have given him some kind of armour against Mrs. Treadwell and her cronies. He'd faced a good many dangers in his past, but this group of old ladies was as scary as he could remember. Especially the one with the fur stole and the gimlet gaze, seated like a queen on a throne in the best armchair. The other two ladies had the sofa, and Mrs. Treadwell had a straight-backed chair presiding over the tea tray. "What does your granddaughter think of your idea?" The older woman's lips thinned.
"I would prefer that Kitty remain unaware of the real reason for you being at the hotel. I am anxious not to trouble her."
"But if she knew there was a threat of some kind to her or to the hotel, she would be more alert." The other women exchanged glances.
"No."
Matt sighed and tried again. "Have you taken your concerns to the police?" His question caused a series of half-stifled nervous titters to break out around the room.
"Unfortunately, our police force is not as one would wish it to be. The station in town is very small and covers a large area. I have raised my concerns with a senior officer, but unless something actually happens, it would seem that the services they can offer are somewhat limited. Besides which, I do have the reputation of the Dolphin to consider." Mrs. Treadwell frowned.
"Are you sure you can't give me any more information?" He knew the woman was holding something back from him. The details she'd provided before his arrival at the hotel had been fairly vague. Mrs. Treadwell was an old acquaintance of his parents. It had only been his own father's insistence that he accept the job that had brought him to the small Devon River resort. Since he had resigned his government employment a few months ago, he had been kicking about at a loose end, and he suspected his father thought this might fill his time. The elderly woman sighed and rose from her seat to cross the room. She opened the lid of a small mahogany writing box standing on her bureau and withdrew a slim bundle of papers.
"Here, this is all I have. My main concern is that Kitty is kept safe and the hotel protected. I'm not sure who this person is or what they hope to obtain."
She proffered the papers to Matt. His gaze locked with hers.
"You suspect you know who it is, though?"
She broke eye contact first, confirming his suspicions that she knew far more than she had told him so far.
"Yes."
She turned away and crossed over to the tall bay window to gaze out at the river. Matt glanced at the papers in his hand, typed notes on cheap white paper, all with unsigned variations of the same message. No envelopes, no signature or clue to who could have written them.
"I'm coming back to claim what's rightfully mine."
"Who do you think it is?" he asked. The older woman's spine stiffened, and there was a tremor in her hand as she moved to straighten the edge of the dark green velvet drape framing the window.
"The person I thought it might be is dead."
A chill ran through Matt's veins at the faint, audible gasp that went around the circle of women.
"And who was that?"
His thoughts automatically strayed to the petite, ash-blonde girl with the shingled hair at the reception desk downstairs. This was connected to her. It had to be.
"My daughter, Eloed, Kitty's mother."
Chapter 2. A chilly late spring breeze blowing from the river cut through the flimsy silk material of Kitty's blouse when she stepped outside the hotel. Clouds scudded past in the bright blue sky, and sunlight sparkled on the water as she hurried along the street. She paused at the corner and hesitated for a moment, wondering if she should return to get a heavier jacket. The melodic chimes of the town hall clock told her there wasn't time if she wanted to get all her errands completed during her lunch break and before the post office closed. Ignoring the cold, she turned into the side street leading away from the river. The post office would probably be busy, and she had several pieces of mail which needed to go out today. The narrow street, lined with tall 18th-century buildings, was crowded with visitors making their way to the main shopping area. The upper ferry from Kingswear across the river had just unloaded, bringing locals and visitors with a steady stream of vehicles, a mix of motors and carts all bumper to bumper, heading towards the centre of town. Kitty walked towards the post office. The closer she got to the town centre, the harder it became to get through the people surrounding her on the narrow, cobbled pavements. Jostled by the press of the crowd, the parcels in her arms slipped and she made a wild grab to save them from landing in the gutter. In the same instant, someone shoved hard into her side, knocking her off balance and out into the road. Her packages fell around her feet as she tried to save herself from falling. She hit the ground and there was a blare of car horns. She looked up and locked her gaze with that of the horrified male driver behind the wheel of the coal merchant's dark green truck, mere inches from her face. She was frozen in place, unable to move, when a strong arm took hold of her and yanked her to safety on the pavement. Kitty's heart thumped against the wall of her chest as she gazed into her rescuer's dark blue eyes.
"It's not advisable to play with the traffic."
Matthew Bryant looked down at her. He still had hold of her arm.
I don't know what happened,
Matt released her and darted out into the road to retrieve her parcels before the coal truck moved on.
You're in luck. Nothing got squashed.
Including me.
Kitty attempted a laugh, but to her horror it came out as more of a sob. He offered her the packages he'd retrieved from the road and studied her face.
You look pretty shaken up. Come on, let me buy you a cup of tea.
Before she could protest, he'd led her inside one of the many tea rooms along the street. A small table for two was vacant right at the back, next to the doors leading to the kitchen.
Thank you. I don't know what happened out there.
Kitty took a seat at the polished table and stared disbelievingly at the hole in the knee of her stockings. She must have grazed her leg when she'd stumbled. Blood oozed stickily through the fine flesh-coloured silk, making her nauseous at the realization of her narrow escape.
Here, take a sip of water. You look as if you're about to pass out.
She hadn't noticed him collecting a glass of water from one of the uniformed waitresses. The water splashed against the glass as she raised it to her lips.
Oh, my hands are shaking.
The corners of his mouth lifted in a faint mockery of a smile.
I'm not surprised. You had a pretty close call there. How did you end up in the road?
Kitty shook her head and tried to gather her thoughts.
I don't know. I was on my way to post my parcels, and as you saw, it's really terribly busy out with visitors. The 1 o'clock upper ferry must have unloaded. Someone bumped into me, and I almost dropped everything.
She paused and took another sip of water.
It's strange. It felt like someone shoved me hard from the side, and I overbalanced and fell out into the road.
It's a good thing I was passing.
He sounded concerned. She nodded slowly.
Yes, or it would have been a pretty nasty accident.
She started to feel better now she was safely seated inside the comfortable tea room. It was certainly a happy coincidence that Mr. Bryant had been there to rescue her. She shivered when she thought of what could have happened if he hadn't saved her. Matt flagged down the waitress once more and ordered a pot of tea and some sandwiches, ignoring Kitty's protests and offer to pay.
You're sure it was an accident?
He asked as the waitress returned with their lunch. Kitty frowned.
Why wouldn't it be?
It was a strange question to ask.
No one would deliberately try to push her under a truck,
except she had definitely felt someone shove hard into her side. He shrugged.
Ignore me. Security is my business, so I suppose I simply have a suspicious mind.
Is that why you were meeting my grandmother, Mr. Bryant? To discuss security?
She was relieved to see her hand had stopped shaking as she poured tea from the pot into the dainty floral-patterned china cups that the waitress had set out in front of them. She thought she detected a flash of something in his expression before he answered her. Annoyance? Irritation? She wasn't sure.
Please, call me Matt, and amongst other things, yes. Your grandmother has hired me to look after security at the hotel. As she is leaving for Scotland soon to go to your aunt, she was worried about leaving you to look after the dolphin alone.
Her indignation must have shown on her face as he held up her hand to stem the protests and outrage that threatened to spill from her lips.
It isn't that she doesn't think you capable of managing the hotel, but she's heard from other hoteliers of several incidents lately that have worried her. And with the summer visitors' season just getting underway, she wanted a visible deterrent to protect the hotel. I think the recent murder has added to her concerns.
The deterrent being you, presumably.
He nodded and grinned at her.
A small dimple flashed briefly in his cheek, making him appear quite boyish for a moment. Kitty took a bite of her sandwich.
Grams hasn't mentioned any incidents to me.
She may not have mentioned anything, but there had been a strange undercurrent lately, even before the body in the river had been discovered. He shrugged again and picked up his cup. The delicate china nestled incongruously fragile in his large hand. She probably didn't want to worry you. Kitty wasn't convinced. It was probably the tale her grandmother had given him, but that didn't mean it was the truth. Matt finished his tea. He wasn't sure Kitty had believed his explanation of why her grandmother had hired him. It had been pure chance that he'd only been a couple of paces behind her when she'd stumbled out into the road. There had been a crowd of people on the pavement at the time. He'd been close enough to save her, but too far away to determine if she had been deliberately pushed, and if so, who had done it. At least the colour had returned to her face now. She'd been ghostly pale when they'd first entered the tea room. I should get back to work. There's a lot to do today. I still have to get these parcels into the post. Kitty touched a napkin to the corners of her mouth. I'll take the packages to the post for you, if you like. I was heading that way. He wanted to see if there was anything in the parcels that Kitty's attacker might have wanted to obtain. At first, he thought she was about to refuse, but then she slid the stack of brown envelopes and packages across the table. Thank you. I'll reimburse you for the postage from petty cash later. I really need to get back and clean up before Graham spots the state of my stockings. She grimaced as she looked at the ugly greys on her knee. Will you be all right walking back by yourself? She gave him a look that he suspected she'd learned from her formidable grandmother. I think I can manage.
I'll see you tomorrow then.
He watched her limp away as he paid the bill for their lunch. When his father had asked him to help Kitty's grandmother, he'd thought the job would be simply babysitting a rather air-headed young woman whilst her grandmother was away. Something that would fill his time while he considered his next steps. Kitty, however, appeared far from irresponsible. He hadn't thought there might be some substance to the older woman's fears for both her granddaughter and her business. Mrs. Treadwell had shaken him slightly with the story of Kitty's mother, Eloed, and her mysterious disappearance in 1916, but he couldn't see how that could be connected to the strange letters, unless someone wanted to use that tale to their advantage somehow. He quickly sifted through the small bundle of parcels that Kitty had left on the table. From their size and shape, they all appeared to be brochures, nothing that anyone would want to prevent from reaching the mail. That left only the possibilities of the incident being an accident after all, or that someone had wanted to harm Kitty. He quickly discounted the accident theory. Kitty had definitely felt someone push her. That meant he had to take Mrs. Treadwell and her theories much more seriously, even if that theory involved a woman who was probably dead. Matt gathered up the packages and took them to the post office. Afterwards, he wandered back through the narrow streets towards the river and the embankment. He hadn't been sure about taking this job. Since leaving the army and his government post, he'd been without a clear focus. After everything he'd been through during the war and afterwards, his father's suggestion of a short-term position in a beautiful, peaceful location had sounded like a good idea. It would give him time to decide what he wanted to do next. Time to finally grieve and to move on with his life, away from places and people that kept reminding him of everything he'd lost. Whilst he'd been busy with work, distracting himself with other people's problems, the passing of the years still hadn't filled the empty space inside his chest. Matt stood on the embankment, lit a cigarette and stared out across the river. The trees on the far bank were bright with the promise of new foliage, and bluebells and primroses peeped out from the unruly clumps of grass beneath them. In the reeds, a small group of fluffy yellow-brown ducklings were barely visible as they paddled around their mother.
Matt sucked in a breath and tried not to think how unfair it was that Edith and baby Betty weren't there to see it.
Kitty made it back to the hotel and hurried up to her room to bathe her leg and change her damaged stockings. Her room was at the top of the hotel, right in the eaves on the third floor. The ceiling was lumpy and uneven, with wooden beams running lengthways. Her furniture was a mishmash of older dark Victorian pieces left from when the hotel had been modernized. The dark pink satin eiderdown on her double bed added a cheerful feminine note to the room, matching the rose that stood on her dresser in a crystal vase. Grams had been disappointed when she'd refused the spare room attached to her own suite, but Kitty preferred the privacy and peace that living in the attics gave her. There were only storerooms and a couple of empty bedrooms used occasionally by staff on that level. Plus, she had a view right along the river of the open farmland and tree-covered hills down to where it opened into the estuary below the castle. She unlocked her door and dropped her handbag on her bed before rushing into her bathroom to clean her leg. It wasn't until she came back out and opened her drawer to find fresh stockings that she had the feeling that something was wrong. The hairs at the nape of her neck prickled as she glanced around the room. Someone had been there. She knew it, and not simply the chambermaids. On the surface, everything looked exactly as she had left it. She frowned and looked back down into the open drawer. Her stockings were still neatly stacked, but the packet on top was the pair that she always kept at the bottom of the pile. She'd been keeping them for a special evening occasion, as they were too fine and expensive for every day. Unnerved, she opened some of her other drawers. The contents appeared neat and undisturbed, but they definitely weren't in the order she'd left them in. Her favourite satin pyjamas were at the back of the drawer, and the ones she'd singed with the iron were at the front. She checked her jewellery box. Not that she possessed anything valuable, but the few items she did own had huge personal meaning for her. The silver locket her mother had given her was still there, along with her great-aunt Livy's sapphire ring. Her mother's picture was still there in its silver frame. Someone had searched through her room, though. But who? And why? Her grandmother wouldn't snoop. She would interrogate Kitty to death if she wanted to know anything, but she would never search through her things. Her little Bavarian clock cuckooed the hour. Her mind whirring, Kitty changed her stockings and removed her hat before leaving her room, double-checking that she'd locked the door behind her. She would have to find out if anyone had borrowed her spare key from Mickey, the maintenance man. The idea that some unknown person had rifled through her personal possessions was scary. Perhaps her recent misadventure had affected her more than she thought, but she had always felt safe and secure in her home before. Now, with a death on her doorstep, a brush with the coal lorry and someone tampering with her possessions, she was suddenly afraid. Perhaps her grandmother had been right to hire Mr. Bryant. Extra security might be in order after all. Something terrifying was going on at the Dolphin. Chapter 3. The discovery that someone had been in her room going through her possessions left Kitty feeling twitchy and uneasy. Her skin crawled at the idea that someone had casually managed to gain entry and touch all her personal belongings. Seeing her things so carefully replaced had left her feeling grubby and dirty. Why would someone have searched through her things? Theft, she could understand, but nothing was missing. Spare keys to all the rooms, including hers and the one for her grandmother's suite, were all hung on a pegboard in Mickey's office, along with spare keys to the various storerooms. Kitty stopped off on her way to her office. Mickey was in his small room, sitting at his desk with a newspaper and his sandwiches in front of him. He was a small, wiry local man, getting on in years. He had lost both his sons in the war. During her childhood, he had been very kind to her, allowing her to trail after him as he carried out his various maintenance jobs. A fog of cigarette smoke filled the air from the ashtray on the desk. He looked up and immediately rose to his feet as she tapped on the open door.
"Did you want me for something, Miss Kitty?"
"No, I just wondered if anyone had been in my room in the last couple of hours." She could see her key hanging from its hook on the pegboard on the far wall. Mickey scratched his head.
"Don't think so, miss. The maids were in yesterday to give it a turn out and early this morning to make the bed and leave the towels. I haven't been out of here much this morning, except to help Cora with a delivery for a couple of minutes. Why, is something wrong?"
Kitty forced herself to smile. "No, everything's fine. I've heard there was a spate of burglaries at some of the local hotels and guest houses. Grams has hired a new security man, Mr. Bryant. But even so, please make sure your office is locked whenever you leave it, to be on the safe side."
The elderly man raised his eyebrows. "Very good, miss. I'll be on my guard."
"Thanks, Mickey." She left him to finish his lunch. It was difficult to know what to do next. Should she raise her concerns with her grandmother? Or should she talk to Mr. Bryant, Matt, about it, since he was now apparently in charge of security at the hotel? Kitty mulled it over as she seated herself at her desk in the small wood-panelled back office behind reception. Perhaps the solution would make itself plain while she worked out the staff rotas for the next 6 weeks. But despite her best efforts, by the time she closed the files, placed her pen back on the stand and finished her shift, her head ached and the problem continued to niggle. Kitty's grandmother expected her to come to dinner in her suite at 7. There were still quite a few things to sort out before she left for Scotland. Kitty planned to ask about Matthew Bryant and how he had been hired. Normally, she knew in advance if any staff were needed and had some input into the interviews. There was something going on that didn't feel right, and she intended to find out more. Her headache had subsided to a dull throbbing in her left temple by the time she had changed into a plain black evening gown and joined her grandmother in her rooms.
"You look pale, darling. Are you feeling well?"
Her grandmother greeted her with a kiss on her cheek and a glass of dry sherry.
"Just a headache. I'm sure it'll go soon."
Kitty frowned at the sherry. It was all part of the pre-dinner ritual. Her grandmother always insisted a small glass improved the appetite and aided digestion. Kitty wasn't so sure, but sipped obediently to please her. She would have preferred a cocktail. A tap at the door signalled the arrival of the trolley containing their dinner. The mouth-watering smell of grilled salmon escaped from below the ornate silver cloches as Kitty took her place by her grandmother. The oak table, which had been owned by Grams's father, had been laid in the wide bay window, affording an evening vista of the river. Coloured electric lights hung on strings glowed orange and yellow, marking the edge of the waterway, an improvement on the old gas lamps. Some of the boats were lit for the first evening cruises of the summer visitors' season, and a few couples walked hand in hand along the footpath. Her grandmother took her seat, and the waiter served them both with minestrone soup before leaving them to eat their first course.
"I bumped into Mr. Bryant at lunchtime."
Kitty smoothed her white linen napkin across her knees and picked up her spoon.
"He told me you'd hired him to look after security here, and that some of the other guests had been having problems."
"And?" the older woman queried.
"I was surprised you hadn't said anything about taking on staff so early in the season, or that you hadn't mentioned that you were worried."
Kitty took a spoonful of her soup and waited for her grandmother's reply.
Matthew is the son of an old friend of mine, General Bryant. He has considerable expertise in security. He worked for the government after the war and has recently resigned from his post. It appeared to be the perfect solution, considering there was so little time before I leave. It would have been nice if you'd mentioned him, though, or your concerns with security. Kitty knew she sounded childishly resentful, but it was a fair comment. She was supposed to be running the hotel jointly with her grandmother, after all.
It didn't seem that important, darling. It's really reports of petty thefts, some vandalism. Of course, with the murder of that poor man found in the river this morning, it seems I made a wise decision. By the way, I gave Matt the vacant staff room on your floor.
The older woman rested her spoon in her empty dish and dabbed at the corners of her mouth with her napkin, leaving red smudges of lipstick on the linen. Kitty's headache kicked up a notch.
Grams, I thought we'd agreed that those rooms were to be used for storage.
Well, darling, he has to live somewhere, and this is only a temporary position. I expect he'll find somewhere else in time. His parents would like him to settle down permanently.
Her grandmother collected the soup dishes and carried them over to the trolley. She then lifted the silver cloches from the plates containing their main courses and returned to the table. Kitty silently counted to three as she stared at the plate of salmon and salad that her grandmother had placed in front of her. When she'd turned 21, she'd insisted on taking a room on the top floor where she could have privacy. Now she would have Matthew Bryant just a few doors away from her at the other end of the corridor. That thought was more than a little disturbing. There had been something about the self-mocking gleam in his eyes when he'd looked at her at lunchtime which had ruffled her senses. Her grandmother changed the subject to her forthcoming trip to Scotland, and they spent the rest of the meal finalising the arrangements. Once the remains of dinner had been cleared away and a tray of coffee deposited on the low table in front of the fire, they moved to the sofas.
What have you done to your leg?
Her grandmother leaned forward to peer at the dressing on Kitty's knee.
A silly accident at lunchtime. Someone barged into me as I was on my way to the post office, and I had a close encounter with a truck. Luckily, your Mr. Bryant happened to be there to catch me. Typical clumsy me, completely ruined my stockings.
Kitty attempted a laugh so her grandmother wouldn't be alarmed. Her grandmother didn't smile.
Please be more careful, Kitty. I've enough to worry about with Livy.
I'm fine, Grams, honestly. It was one of those silly accidents that happen sometimes.
She wished she hadn't told her the whole story. She should have made something up to stop her grandmother from worrying. Then again, if she had bumped into Matthew, he could well have mentioned the incident, so whatever she'd decided to do would have been wrong.
It sounds as if it was a good thing that Matt was there.
Heat mounted in Kitty's cheeks as she recalled the strength in his grip as he'd pulled her to safety, and the frisson of electricity that had hummed between them in that brief physical contact.
Yes, I suppose it was.
Silence fell as both women sipped their coffee. Her grandmother sighed.
Kitty, I am worried about going to Scotland and leaving you here. I know you think I'm a bossy, fussy old woman, but you and Livy are all I have. And as one gets older, I suppose it's natural to think of the worst things that can happen in life. This American jazz singer, well, it's not like having one of our local entertainers. It's a lot of work for you.
Kitty swallowed. She'd never seen her grandmother's expression quite like this before. A mix of fear and worry, highlighted by the fine wrinkles around her eyes and mouth.
I promise I'll take care, Grams.
and Miss Delaware will give us a wonderful start to the summer season. Room reservations are up already, and tickets for the ball are selling briskly. You said yourself that the hotel was busy. She reached out to give her grandmother's hand a reassuring squeeze. The older woman's fingers felt frail and cold in her grasp, and a sliver of fear iced through Kitty's heart.
Since your mother went missing all those years ago, it's made me even more aware of how things can change in the blink of an eye. She's been in my thoughts a lot again lately.
I know, Grams. She wondered what had made her grandmother suddenly think of Eloed. Her grandmother might exasperate her, but she still loved her dearly and was grateful for everything she'd done to raise her after her mother's disappearance. She'd also thought about her mother a lot recently. Over the years, her grandmother had spent a small fortune trying to trace her, without any luck. As Kitty had grown older and each landmark birthday had passed with no news or contact, both she and her grandmother had been forced to conclude that she had to be dead. Indeed, one of the private investigators her grandmother had hired had come to that same conclusion, even giving them details of what he thought may have happened. It was all conjecture, however, as he had not provided a shred of proof. Her mother had vanished when Kitty was six. She'd arrived at the Dolphin from London with Kitty, stayed for a few months, and had then disappeared from the face of the earth. Kitty often wondered what her life had been like before then. She vaguely recalled a brownstone building with stairs and a park. She had no idea where her father might be. She couldn't recall him at all. The name on the birth certificate had led her nowhere, and her grandmother had never appeared to have any information other than she believed he had gone to America. Kitty finished her drink. I'm going upstairs to finish reading the book I started yesterday. It's a Dorothy L. Sayers, and I had to leave it at a good bit. She placed her cup down on the tray.
I don't know how you can enjoy those dreadful crime novels. So gory. I think I'll get an early night too, though. It'll be a long day tomorrow with all that travelling.
Her grandmother's voice was vague, as if her thoughts were elsewhere. Kitty bent and kissed her cheek, savouring the familiar scent of the roses in her grandmother's favourite perfume. By the way, did you pop into my room earlier for something? The older woman frowned.
No, why?
Nothing. I thought you might have been looking for something you needed to pack. She gave a small shrug to show it wasn't important. Night, Grams. See you tomorrow.
Matt made his way to Mrs. Treadwell's suite as soon as he received her message.
Tell me what happened to Kitty at lunchtime, she commanded as soon as he entered her room.
He took a seat on the sofa opposite her and told her about the incident with the truck. He guessed from the empty cups on the tray in front of him that Kitty had just left. The older woman paled as he told her his theory that Kitty might have been pushed deliberately.
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. I have to leave tomorrow, but it worries me that Kitty might not be safe.
At this moment, the best you can do is trust that I will be looking out for her.
You truly have no idea who could have been behind this or the letters?
She shook her head in response to his question, but her gaze didn't meet his.
No idea at all. I've lain awake at night, racking my brains, trying to think what this could be about. Kitty is the only thing of value that has ever been left with me when Eloed disappeared without a trace. Painful though it was, I have accepted that my daughter is most likely dead, and even if she were alive, there is no reason she would send these notes instead of coming herself.
Matt leaned back in his seat.
He could see she was genuinely worried, but he still felt she was keeping something from him.
Thanks for all the information you gave me about the letters. I've started to sift through it all, looking for pointers. Mrs. Treadwell nodded, the creases on her brow showing she was still troubled and making her look older than she had previously seemed.
There's one more thing. Kitty asked me if I'd been looking for something in her room. She made something of a joke about it, but it has me worried. Why would she think I had been in her room?
You think someone else might have got into her room?
This was concerning. It meant whoever was behind the strange happenings might have access to the hotel and really was targeting Kitty. It struck me as an odd thing for Kitty to say. Mickey, our maintenance man, has spare keys in his office.
Matt turned the information over in his mind. It's a good thing I'm on the same floor as Kitty. At least if there is a problem, I'm close at hand. She's quite isolated up there from the rest of the hotel.
The old lady smiled for the first time during their interview. Thank you, Matt. Though I'm rather afraid that Kitty doesn't feel quite the same way about having you as a neighbour.
Chapter 4.
Kitty was surprised at how alone she felt when her grandmother's hired Bentley finally drove away. She blinked back the tears which unexpectedly prickled beneath her eyelids. What's the matter with me? I'm not usually this maudlin, she muttered to herself. She tugged the edges of her neat navy blue cardigan closer together to protect her from the spring breeze blowing across from the river and turned to re-enter the hotel. A lock of her hair blew across her eyes, the blonde tendril further blurring her vision. She put up her hand to return her hair to order and promptly cannoned into an older man just leaving the hotel. Oh, I'm so sorry, Kitty apologized. She'd only seen this particular guest a few times before, although he'd been staying with them for a few weeks. A thick-set, middle-aged man with glasses and a surly expression, he'd stood out from their usual guests. He dined alone and never appeared to receive any post or messages. She had assumed he must be a commercial traveller, in the area on business of some kind. The man nodded and grunted a brief acknowledgement before hurrying off down the street towards the centre of town. Kitty walked into the hotel lobby, rather discomforted by the man's brusque reaction. Usually, guests at the hotel were cheerful and chatty. This man had seen her several times before when he'd come to the desk for his room key. It was clearly going to be one of those days where everything seemed out of kilter. When she reached her small office tucked away at the back of reception, she discovered Matthew Bryant seated and waiting for her in the chair opposite her desk, obviously refreshed from a night's sleep, and wearing a well-tailored dark grey suit.
I see you've made yourself at home.
Irritation at his presence in her office warred with the involuntary jump her heart gave when his gaze locked with hers. He ignored her barbed comment.
Good morning to you too.
Your grandmother mentioned something to me last night that I wanted to talk to you about. Kitty took her place behind the desk. I'm not sure I understand. Is it to do with your contract of employment? She supposed she would have to try and do some kind of induction for him, although he seemed to have made himself pretty familiar with everything already. His brow furrowed.
No, my contract is fine. Your grandmother and I agreed terms when I accepted the position.
It is to do with my job here, though. Mrs. Treadwell told me she thought you were worried that someone may have had access to your room yesterday.
What made her say that?
She held her breath for a moment as she waited for his answer. She'd thought she'd managed to avoid alarming her grandmother.
I gather it was a feeling she got about something you said to her.
Okay. Kitty leaned back in her chair.
Yes, someone was in my room yesterday, and I don't mean the chambermaids. I think it was while I was with you at lunchtime. Whoever it was searched through my things. Nothing was taken, as far as I can tell, but it was odd and creepy. She had tried not to think too deeply about it, convincing herself that she must have been mistaken. Matt's gaze grew more intense, forcing her to look at him. "You've no idea what they might have been looking for?" She shook her head. "No clue. Unless, of course, they were after money or expensive jewellery. My jewellery was untouched, but most of it is costume, and I don't keep any money in my room. But they were tidy about it. Everything was neatly replaced in my drawers and cupboard, but things weren't quite in the right place. That's how I knew my things had been tampered with, and I hadn't imagined it." There, she'd admitted the truth out loud, and it scared her. He rested his elbows on the arms of the chair and steepled his hands together beneath his chin. "If you don't believe it was a member of staff, how do you think they got in?"